Now, the voices of Bronco Athletics, Bob Beeler and Chris Lewis on Sports Radio 93.1 FM and 1350 AM, The Ticket.
Prepping for the show and writing a blog last night brought back some very pleasant memories as I was researching and filling in gaps in my memory about some of the better opening games that I have been to in Major League Baseball. The blog at KTIK.com entitled Baseball's Opening Day, Wish I Was There. No offense, Chris and Fish, but I would rather be sitting in a stadium today for a Major League Baseball game than being on the show with you. Now, I would certainly invite both of you to come with me because we need to be at one of these places on opening day 2018.
I have an opening day hot take, but I don't want to take away from your enthusiasm because it's not necessarily a down note on opening day, but you were just so happy today. Fish, we get to see Bob every day, right? Like, pretty much every weekday he comes in. Even sometimes he invites us over his house to watch some games. That's even happened before. I don't know if I've ever seen him just, like, happier on any given day than just, like, when baseball is on to start the season. He's got the laptop open by his desk because he's got his MLB, what do they call it, their package where you can see all their games? Extra innings?
Extra innings, yes.
Yeah.
Which, by the way, they better never eliminate.
Oh, because if they do, you're just going to move to the Bay Area and never come back to Boise ever
again. No, I meant they don't better eliminate extra innings in games.
I thought you meant
with the BS stuff the minor league is pulling with the runner at second base in extra innings.
I see. I thought you meant get rid of the package so you can't see your Giants anymore because you would.
That would hurt too.
You would go back to the Bay Area and never set foot in Boise during the baseball season months because you don't want to be anywhere away. But you're just so happy. Mm-hmm. Your smile's lighting up the room. You're giving updates on every little thing that happens. The lineup comes out and you're like grinning about it. Like, you even posted a picture out on your Twitter page at BSU Bob with you just grinning away wearing your Giants World Series champion 2014. By the way, if you wore 2010, I might have to punch you because I'm not about that 2010 World Championship.
I might have a 2010, but I think I've gained a few pounds since 2010, so it might not fit, and that's probably why it didn't make its way onto the show.
That 2010 one, that should have been Philadelphia.
And I must say this, Fish, the two Marlins World Series championships, both were at the expense of the Giants. They eliminated the Giants in the National League playoffs both years.
So why do you love this day so much? Like, we'll go into the blog and what you look out of opening days and how many you've been to. But, like, what is it about this day that makes you happier than any other day in the year?
Well, I think it's a renewal of spring. Spring is here. Many big cities, it's a holiday. We've always, you know, if I was in the East, I'd take the day off. You'd drive somewhere, either to Boston or New York or Baltimore, Philadelphia, Pittsburgh, some of the places that I have seen opening days. But everybody thinks their team is going to do better. And I don't necessarily mean everybody thinks they're going to win the World Series, but everybody is hopeful that you can get the most out of your team for that season. And that's what happens that opening day. I've had a chance to see opening days in 11 different places. And when I say places, I didn't want to use the word cities because I've seen opening day in New York at both the Yankees and the Mets. And when you're in the East, Chris, as you will know, you sometimes worry that the game is either going to get rained out like it did in Cincinnati and Detroit today, or maybe snowed out or some sort of inclement weather. But you're hoping for a nice day. You're hoping that it's going to be a fun day. And you hope that if you go to the game caring who's going to win, that they come through for you. In the blog, I chronicled the five best opening days I have been to. And the first one that's up is number five was the Cardinals and the Mets. I went to Shea Stadium. Really didn't care who went, but it was just who won the game, but it was a fantastic game. And then other times I've gone to games where the Giants have participated in opening day, and I've cared who's won that game.
So you really care about the result on opening day? I feel like
I care about the result for every game. I know you're not going to go 162-0, but
I just hope you have a good old time. The hot dog you have is good and all that stuff. So that's
I will order a hot dog, and my day will be soured a little bit if they don't have the brown deli mustard.
Oh, my God.
Gouldens in particular, but I'll live with another brand as long as it's the deli mustard and not the yellow mustard.
And if they have yellow mustard,
I'll be very disappointed.
Ruined?
Like, I don't want to say it's ruined, but it'll be like I should have brought packets of the brown mustard to put in my pocket so that I could have it for the hot dog.
I feel like, you know, what could be next? Like, your charts that you're working on for your spring game could get dumped into the water, and it wouldn't matter on opening day. It'd be just fine, and it wouldn't ruin your spirits whatsoever.
As long as I had time on the next day to replace them, yes. Yes. But It's just something. I've gone a couple of times to opening days, and three of my top five all-time opening days, guys, I went to opening day solo. Two times out of necessities, my number one and number two games, which were pennant-raising games for the Giants in 2011 and 2013, and I knew that if I tried to get other people to go, it would be much harder to get tickets for two, three, four people than it would be to get one, and it would also be pricier. So I went to those games by myself. My number four game was at Minute Maid Park in Houston. I also went solo because I took it as a trip and went to opening day in Houston, saw the Giants and the Astros play a series, and then went up to Dallas and saw in Arlington the Rangers open the season. Just went to one game at the Rangers, but it was their opener, and I couldn't get anybody to go with me. So I decided to partake in both of those. I could have gotten in, went to the game in Texas with a friend of mine who lived in Dallas, but couldn't get anybody to go with me to the game in Houston. But I've always felt, you're a baseball game, if you can't make friends and chat with people that are sitting next to you or around you at the ballpark, you can't make friends with anybody. It's a totally different atmosphere than going to a football game or a basketball game, I think, because there's so much dead time. Everybody's managing along, and by the time the game's over, you're friends with everybody in the section.
Really? That still happens? Like, ain't half the section on their phone?
Fortunately, not my section.
Where's your section at? Like, the Bay Area, if you're going to those games, you can't be separated from technology in the Bay Area. You know how it goes there. All the technology people. So, I mean, that might have been what it used to be, but maybe that's what it is right now. But, yeah, I've never been to an opening day, so I'm just living vicariously for you right now. Did my parents fail me by not ever, like,
yes,
letting me go to opening
absolutely.
Day?
Absolutely.
I've never been.
You're deprived. Absolutely deprived.
I've been opening day of minor league baseball and ones that I've called. Does that count?
Not the same.
Not the same?
Not the same, in my opinion. Not the same. One of these times you'll have to go. You will just have to go. And I have to tell you a funny story. When I was in college, I am somebody that when you go to a game with me, the best games I've ever been to are extra inning games. Do not expect to leave early.
Right. You seem like a high-stress company. You seem like a high-stress. You're making all these rules. You got to show up and can't leave.
Yeah.
And your section has to be engaged.
Yeah.
It's really high-stress.
So we went in college to the Braves opener in 1985. Braves were losing by four runs in the eighth inning, and the three guys with me wanted to leave early. They wanted to go down to downtown Atlanta and partake in the nightlife. I had the car. I drove. They tried to get me to leave, and I'm like, no, I don't leave the games early. Oh, but the Braves are terrible. They're not going to win this game. They're losing to the Padres 7-3. So they coaxed me into leaving by saying if the Braves rallied and won, they would buy me tickets to any Major League Baseball game at the Braves that year. So I took them up on it. Braves scored one run, and that was it. Had game two have happened, it was the same scenario. The Padres were ahead, and the Braves scored three in the ninth to tie the game and two in the tenth to win the game. If it had been game two, I would have had tickets any time I wanted to go to the Braves that season.
Now, is that any one time or any time?
No, it was any time. It was any time. Any game you want to go to, the three of them would say they would pay for it.
So you almost
because they figured there was no way the Braves were going
to
win that game.
Yeah, and a hookup. Almost.
You
missed it by a day.
Missed it by a day. Best two games because of the pageantry, and that's something that you don't get at regular season games other than opening day. You have the bunting out. They introduce the whole squad. There's usually somebody famous there to sing the national anthem. There's usually somebody famous there to throw out the first pitch. And I don't know. It's just to me a holiday. It should be a national holiday.
I mean, that leads me to my one take that I have, if you will, about opening day, and it's great. It's awesome. Phillies are supposed to be a lot better this year, too, so that's going to be fun when they take the field. I think it's around 2 o'clock our time, so I'll keep an eye on that game. But I do not think that opening day, and again, maybe it's just because I'm skewed, although I don't think I've been to any of the opening day or any of the days that I'm about to mention, but I don't think it's the best game to go to. I don't think opening day is the highlight day of the Major League Baseball, like, you know, consuming the product. I would put July 4th ahead of it. I would think I think baseball on the 4th of July is more, to me, special in my mind than even the opening day is. July 4th, the weather is better, for one, and you could wear shorts and short sleeves at most of the ballparks and be okay. Opening day, it's a little bit chilly. I don't know. I'm more in the mood for the ballpark food and all the other things that come with the ballpark when it's nice out, when it's warm out, when it's 90 degrees or 85 degrees at least. And July 4th gives you that. July 4th typically has, well, the American flag highlighted quite a bit. The jerseys might be a little bit different, or at least the hats might be a little bit different in the way that they've done it.
I've always hated, by the way, the specialty jerseys. Hated them.
Oh, my gosh. You are just so traditional. You cannot handle any form of change whatsoever when it comes to baseball, and it can be frustrating at times. But no, I like July 4th baseball. I mean, not to say opening day is trash. I'm not saying that. But if I had to pick one, like, you know, regardless of team, regardless of record, regardless of ballpark that you're going to, like, pick a day of the baseball calendar that you'd want to go to a game. I would say the 4th of July over opening day.
I've been to many 4th of July games. I love 4th of July games. I'm going to both. But if you told me I could go to one, yeah, I would go to opening day. I think you're also going to get a better pitching matchup because everybody's ace theoretically is going to throw, and I love pitching matchups. Mm-hmm. But a lot of times early in the season, you don't get the crispest game the first day. Yeah. And sometimes it is cold, and you see a lot of batters that kind of
shake.
You're
more in the flow of it. You're more in the rhythm of baseball season when it's the 4th of July, and it's really the highlight game. All-Star break's coming up, too. You know, in a couple of weeks, you'll have the All-Star game. You're really feeling like you're in the heat of the season. And it doesn't matter if your team is bad by July 4th. It's the 4th of July. You're having a time out. It's America. And get a hot dog, get fireworks probably after the game, too. Man, it's just, to me, 4th of July is number one on the list. Opening day, probably number two, but not like the 4th of July.
Another $1,000 your chance to win is right now. Text the national keyword now. That's N-O-W. And do that right now to 95819. Again, now, N-O-W, to 95819. We'll text you back to confirm your entry. Data and messaging rates may apply. It's $4,000 a day on Sports Radio The Ticket. Up next, how much should be getting to a Final Four be celebrated? Do you think an NFL team would put up a banner for losing in the NFC or AFC championship games? That's basically what the Final Four is. Chris and I will discuss next on Sports Radio The Ticket. Been to a ton of opening games, been to a Major League All-Star game, been to playoff games, been to a World Series. Never been to a Final Four, Chris. That would be something that would be on my bucket list to do. Had a chance to go one year and it just was too expensive. I had a chance with tickets very close to the start time living in Pennsylvania, and it was down in Tampa, and it was going to cost me $1,000 to fly to Tampa. And I just said, you know, the four teams that were in the Final Four that year just aren't special enough for me to drop $1,000.
Who would need to be in the Final Four to make you drop $1,000 on it? I think that's the question.
I don't think there's anybody that I would drop $1,000 on to see in the Final Four. My team gets to the Final Four. I'm not having to drop $1,000.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm going to the game on Learfield expense at that point.
I got a credential for the Final Four back in 2013 in Atlanta. It's a lot to get there, though, although you got reimbursed to get there. So it's quite the drive from Syracuse, New York to Atlanta, Georgia. That's not what you would call a routine drive, but it was certainly a fun experience to go to a Final Four.
So what makes it? I talked about going to opening day and how special it is in the different places. What made the Final Four special? What made it unique,
well,
you think?
This is one of the ones where they had the court in the middle of the arena, okay, and all that, like so many people surrounding it. Like, I never taken in a basketball game like that where you have the court in the middle of a dome stadium and all those seats surrounding it, which is, you know, very interesting. They made it feel like a Super Bowl. Like, I don't know how many people have been in the city where there's a Super Bowl, but like there's all these events that go along with it. There's like, you know, the weather was pretty good in Atlanta too, so there was concerts and stuff outside the arena, so all that was fun. And then for the game itself, there's a level of tenseness that is at a big game event. It might not be unique to a Final Four exactly, but it had that big game tenseness to it where the fans were kind of swinging with every, you know, dribble of the basketball, with every trigger of a jump shot. So that's what I enjoyed about it.
Well, let me ask you a question about the Final Four, just as a guess, and people at home can kind of be thinking, oh, I wouldn't have known what the answer would be. There's 300 and some basketball teams, right? Someone from like 325, 350 now that are out there. Is that right?
Mm-hmm.
Roughly. How many teams, different schools, do you think have been to the Final Four?
I don't know. I don't know the answer to that question.
I didn't either. I looked it up. But I'm just saying, what would you guess? Well, how rare do you think it would be? How many?
I'd say 40.
40 schools have been to the Final Four. Fish, do you hazard a guess on that?
I would say 50.
Both of you are light. 93 schools have been to the Final Four, yeah, which surprised me.
Back a lot. Wow.
If I said five teams, North Carolina, Kentucky, UCLA, Duke, and Kansas, those are the five teams that have gone to the Final Four the most. How many times combined do you think those five teams have gone to the Final Four?
A lot. UCLA has been a bunch. I would say upwards of 30-something, maybe more, 40-something.
Fish?
Where are we going? Where are we going with this?
I'll say 50 again.
Those five teams have been in the Final Four 86 times.
Oh, my gosh. See, yeah. They're not even close. So, was your goal to embarrass us? With
no, questions? My goal was to just basically say that much like the assignment where do you reseed the Final Four, when I did before the research, I was for yes, and then I was for no. I was going to be, is the Final Four a big accomplishment or not? For the average school, I think it is.
Yeah, I was going to go with, like, you know how we've basically turned the Final Four into a prize in itself and have almost devalued the championship game because we've turned the Final Four into such a big deal. And it's just like, I've been thinking, what other sport do we do this for? And I don't know if it's any. Maybe you can come up with a couple of examples. But the way we usually think about sports, it's usually the champion and then second place is the first loser. Like, that's just sort of the attitude that we Americans have with sports. Participation trophies. We are so dead set against anything that is an accomplishment that isn't winning a championship, because championships matter more than anything else. So if that's the case, we've really turned the Final Four into really its own championship. And it's odd because, like, in the NBA, we don't really congratulate teams for making it to your conference final. Like, congratulations, you're in the Final Four. No, that's not a thing. The NFL, you made it to your conference championship game. Other than the Colts, who I think have hung up a banner of them being in an AFC championship game, nobody really goes nuts for a championship game appearance. Even with college football, and since they've expanded the playoffs to four teams, while it's cool to make the playoffs, I don't think anybody thinks it's like your grand accomplishment, your season is complete because you made it to the college football playoff. No, it's still about, did you win that playoff game and make it to the championship, and did you win your championship? Like, even a Super Bowl. Super Bowl appearances is one thing, but that's at least a championship game. Do we even distinguish the difference between coaches that have made it to a Final Four and coaches that have actually made it to the championship game? I feel like we don't even make that distinction.
I think it's Final Four and championship.
Yeah. And that's odd. Like, Tom Izzo has been the biggest beneficiary out of this than any coach that I can think of, because he had his streak where, like, every class that he's ever had at Michigan State, I think that's since ended, but has made it to a Final Four. And in that whole stretch, he's only won one championship. Very rarely is he getting to the championship game. And when he does, he's getting smoked in the championship game. But we turned the Final Four into its own accomplishment. So my question is, why? Like, why is the Final Four such a big deal, with the next step of actually getting to the championship game almost seems not significant compared to actually getting to the Final Four?
I think it's because you're getting to the grand celebration. The College World Series for both baseball and softball takes eight. There, I think you raise a pennant, put a banner on your stadium wall if you get to the College World Series. Maybe somebody might put one up for runner-up, but I doubt it. I don't think anybody's going to put something up saying they went 2-2 in the College World Series, or 1-2, or wherever it was.
Fair.
But it is unique that that's the, and it's probably because that's where the final weekend starts, or final week in the case of the World Series starts in college. The Dodgers, I'm guessing today, are going to raise a National League Championship banner. I don't know if anybody's going to raise one for a division championship, unless maybe it was so out of the blue that somebody won a division in Major League Baseball. I don't see I'm trying to think who won a division. The Indians won a division and lost in the first round or second round of the playoffs. I don't see the Indians making a big deal and raising a division banner. There may be something that goes up on the board that shows the division years, but I can't believe they're going to make a big deal out of it.
Yeah, and it's not like I don't know, maybe like Bobby Cox had a streak of winning the NL East that was ridiculous.
14 years in a row, I think.
That maybe became a thing, but like we didn't maybe we did define his legacy based on that. So it might be the worst example to pick, but like, we don't define legacies on division titles or championship, or like, you know, winning, maybe winning the NL or the NL or the AL, but they are also separate leagues. So that maybe comes from a tradition of, you know, the NL and AL being separate leagues in itself. And I do think it's worth celebrating. And MLB kind of goes nuts for each playoff series win, which I find odd, where like they have the champagne celebration after you win the wild card game, then after you win the DS, and after you win the CS. So maybe that's akin to the celebration for making it to a Final Four. But I don't know. Like, it really does feel like Izzo's Final Four streak matters more than the fact that he only has one championship. Mm-hmm. And to devalue the championship by making getting to the Final Four a championship, then anything that comes after that is gravy. It just goes against how I usually consume sports.
I'll give you one that goes totally in the opposite direction. Think about clinching either the Eastern or Western Conference in the Stanley Cup playoffs. They say it's bad luck to touch the conference championship trophy. Those players will skate to the other end of the ice to not be near this trophy for winning the conference championship. Nobody wants that trophy. Mm-hmm. Everyone wants the one you can actually drink out of and share with all your family and friends for the one day that if you're on the team and get it. So hockey is totally the opposite. Yeah. They don't care about coming in second place.
Exactly. And you don't cut down the nets, if you will, in the NHL, because the grand prize is winning the Stanley Cup. I almost feel like in college basketball, the grand prize is the Final Four. And it's almost like, all right, did you win the championship is almost a footnote. Mm-hmm. And again, that's usually not how we think of sports.
But would you say the year you went, did Syracuse get to the championship game? Or
they lost to Louisville. They didn't lose to Louisville anymore.
Wow, that's another story.
They got to take it away. Although I think Syracuse's run might have been taken away too.
There's too many of them. Like I've always said, if you want to pull the championship back or pull the appearance back and vacate it, then find everybody that was there and give them their money back because the game did not exist.
So can I use my resume stuff that I use out of college?
You made it up.
Four run.
You made it up.
Like I can't use that broadcast stretch to get a job. Like I have to give up Boise State now because I might not have, you know, been able to be here without that.
I'll tell you a little thing. When I gave the Final Four numbers, how many times each team had been there, I added back the ones that were vacated.
I mean, because it's stupid. That's why.
Final Four Saturday. It's going to be right here on Sports Radio The Ticket. The incredible run for Loyola Chicago continues at 4 as the Ramblers will take on Michigan. It's going to take place at the Alamo Dome, one of those domes that Chris is talking about where there's so many seats around a small court. Kansas Villanova will follow at about 6:50. Final Four is on Sports Radio The Ticket, as is the national championship game, which will take place Monday at 7:20. If you can't watch it, be sure to listen to it right here on The Ticket. Coming up next in the update, what's the latest on what's going on at the University of Idaho? Next on Sports Radio, The Ticket.
Start The Ticket Sports Update with a little bit of update. What's happening over at the University of Idaho? According to Chad Kripe, the Idaho Statesman, more than 50 people attended the University of Idaho Student Senate meeting last night, which revolved around a potential recommendation to Idaho President Staven to fire Vandals AD Rob Spear for how he handled a sexual assault allegation in 2013 against a football player. Kripe will join Caves and Prater today at 4 o'clock, so make sure you tune into that. Give you guys all the latest on what happened at the meeting and what's going on at the University of Idaho. Well, it's Bob's favorite day of the year. Major League Baseball officially underway, and my Marlins, for some reason, got the day started, taking on the Cubs. And the game started in a perfect way to describe how I feel about the Marlins season this year.
I expect him to take a pretty healthy cut here if he gets a juicy-looking first-pitch fastball from Urania.
Urania to Happ. And a drive to right.
Go, baby.
What were you saying, JD?
Yes, sir.
Good. Oh, baby.
Oh, my. That's unbelievable.
The season has begun.
Oh, this place. And it's full of Cup fans. And they are on their feet. Ian Happ. Unbelievable stuff.
Last night I was getting my fill of Major League Baseball talk, was watching the Major League Baseball Network, and they had their opening day preview show. Ron Darling and John Smoltz were there, and I can't remember which one said it, but they were predicting different things that were going to be first for Major League Baseball, and one of them picked Ian Happ with the home run on the first at-bat of the game in Miami. And again, that's the first game to start today.
First pitch of the Major League season.
That's kind of crazy, and part of me was listening to that clip, and I'm like, How are the Cubs batting first at home?
No, they're in Miami, and they're
that crowd was in Miami.
Yeah, I'm
yelling
we're
and screaming
the game
for a Cubs home run.
We had a discussion yesterday what the TV is going to be. It's of course on baseball. I have seen maybe three Marlins fans, and every time they pan out, it's Cubs fans.
Where's Marlins man at though?
Great segue, Chris. Speaking of Marlins man, he has officially become a free agent. He told ESPN today that him and the team could not come to an agreement on tickets. Marlins man had offered them, I think, around $200,000 cash straight up to get 3 years of season tickets. He assumed a 10% season discount because there's no All-Stars, and a 10% season discount because he was paying in front. The team said no, so he now has told ESPN that he is a free agent looking for any team services. He told ESPN he estimates he attends about 263 sporting events a year in highly visible seats.
And I thought he also had a few other things he wanted. I think he wanted to throw out a first pitch.
Yeah, and he wanted Marlins man Mondays.
I would have given him the first pitch. I mean, as much money as he spent over the time, I mean, I've seen sponsors throw out the first pitch at places. So why they couldn't give him the first pitch, I don't know that I give him what did he want for Marlins man Monday?
I think it was just supposed to be, you know, there'd be some giveaways for Marlins man themed giveaways, Marlins man themed memorabilia.
I don't think I would have given that, but I would have given him a chance to throw out the first pitch.
I don't think him being a free agent is of any value to him. He is Marlins man. If he wore another jersey, it's just another fan in the front row wearing a team's jersey. Mm-hmm. He's Marlins man. The fact that what made him a thing is the fact that he was wearing a Marlins jersey.
It's and not what, like he's and wherever some kind he of, was, whether it was yeah. basketball or baseball. I don't
exactly.
know if I've ever seen him in a football game. Have you?
Yeah, I don't ever see the fans of a football game.
Yeah, it's harder.
Anyway, it's hard for them to get into the shot. But yeah, like that was the randomness of him wearing a Marlins jersey at all these events is what made him a star. It's not like he's an engaging personality. It's not like he was interviewed. It's not like he's been in movies. Like, it's just the Marlins jersey was the star more than like the actual guy was. So if you change the jersey, he's no longer a star.
He said he told ESPN four teams have reached out to him for his services, whatever those may be. So somebody's interested.
Well, especially if they think he's going to buy those high-priced seats behind the plate.
Well, he sounds like an agent of a free agent that isn't getting much value on the open market.
Multiple teams are interested in me. And
yeah, the price is going to be driven up high, so you better get in. Yeah, sure, buddy.
Well, speaking of, the Marlins are currently losing 8-4 going into the bottom of the eighth inning. I will say the first inning outside that home run we just heard featured three hit batters. One of them driving in a run and all nine Cubs batters making a plate appearance in the first inning. That's how my season started.
Well, at 2:15, we're going to go through the opening day of Major League Baseball and react as if it were college football. Because, hey, baseball is 162 games and people don't go nuts for one game. But in college football, they absolutely do. So what if it was a college football theme for this? So that's what we're going to do at 2:15.
And this was going to be one of 12 games to determine who goes to the playoffs.
Yeah.
Well, Bob, your Giants don't play till later today, but are you looking forward to March 2019 yet?
Why should I be?
Well, it came out today that your closer, Mark Melancon, will start the day on the 10-day DL.
Well, they've paid a lot of money to not get a lot of services from Mr. Melancon.
So 2019, already calling your name, Bob, or do you still have some faith?
Oh, I think he'll be back at some point. How good he'll be is another question.
Do you have any faith in your Giants this year?
Yeah, I have some faith in my Giants.
I think you picked him to make the playoffs.
I did not. Based on the start of the season, no. I'd rather be surprisingly pleased than overly disappointed.
He's just trying to make himself feel better. Give us the honesty.
They can't be worse than the Marlins.
They can't be worse than they were last year either.
I think Bob's celebrating the fact that he cannot have the worst team on this show like he did last year. It's almost a physical impossibility. Well, sneak peek of the 2018 Basketball Hall of Fame class came out today, according to Adrian Wojnarowski. Grant Hill, Jason Kidd, and Steve Nash all informed that they will be entering the Naismith Basketball Hall of Fame later this year. Full class will be announced during the Final Four this weekend. A couple other nominees include Ray Allen and Chris Webber, among others.
Grant Hill being a Hall of Famer is the interesting one because, again, it's more when you think of Grant Hill, you think of what he didn't accomplish versus what he did accomplish because he left so much on the table. Now, when he did play, like, he was off the charts in his Detroit days and when he was able to play with with Orlando, he was really good, but you just still think of more what he left on the table. But the standards for the Basketball Hall of Fame are so low, really. They kind of devalued what is a Hall of Famer with a lot of the other guys that they previously put in. Jason Kidd and Steve Nash, interesting that those two go in together for a good chunk of people. That's like the, you know, the best point guards that they've ever seen. And now this era with, you know, Westbrook and Harden and Curry, there's so many great point guards
now. Ball.
But I think, I think it comes back to you're thinking of what people do in the pros, why it's so wide-ranging. Christian Laettner's a Hall of Famer. Yeah. He didn't do much in the pros at all. This is a all-basketball Hall of Fame. I think the NBA missed the boat in not having their own Hall of Fame like the NHL, like the NFL, and like Major League Baseball.
Indeed. There's Chris Webber's timeout.
Heard him into his basketball resume for the Basketball Hall of Fame.
I think his interview with JP gets put in, though.
Yeah, maybe could JP
That's a Hall of Fame moment for him.
Did JP do the induction like intro? Like, I know their relationship is tight now. Like, does JP present Chris Webber into the Hall of Fame?
I think you want an Ohio State guy introducing a Michigan guy.
But they're so tight now. I'm surprised, like, JP, I didn't hear the interview, so I'm sorry, but, like, did he insult Chris Webber during the interview? Did he mention the timeout? Like, I feel like those are the things that JP
would do. On the air, he did not mention the timeout. I've heard rumblings from other sports writers. He might have, like, signaled a timeout as he walked away and then throw up the O of Ohio State. No, I don't think. JP was very classy from what I'm told. And we'll end the sports update with a quick little note about college basketball. Despite making history with a first-round exit as a one seed, it was announced today that UVA's Tony Bennett was honored as the AP Coach of the Year. One thing to note, ballots are done before March Madness begins.
I was going to say that usually is the case. Most leagues, the regular season is the total thing, and they get announced usually after the season or towards when it's going. Tomorrow morning at 9, you can get $50 worth of gift certificates for only $25 to the Tortilla Factory Mexican Grill. It's home of Boise's only tortilla machine, guaranteeing you the freshest tortillas and Mexican food in the Treasure Valley. Again, tomorrow morning at 9, be ready. Go to KTIK.com and click on Sweet Deals. Coming up next in Quick Hits, what do Johnny Manziel and Montel Cozart have in common?
Uh-oh.
That's next on Sports Radio The Ticket.
Quick Hits with Bob and Chris. Topic number one.
What annual promise did the NFL break again?
Every year, you got these prospects taking the Wonderlic test with the understanding that the results are to be confidential, not released to the public. And once again, scores are trickling out, and if you really wanted to search and find it, you could find some of the scores today. I saw some of them released, and this just continues, like, make me upset. Like, do you have any kind of pride whatsoever as a league to, like, put a handle on this? You every year you promise the incoming class that these things will not become public, and every single year we know about the results of these Wonderlic scores. So, like, I probably wouldn't take it if I was a prospect, and I know it's easy for me to say that because I'm not in a position to where I am, and if you take that attitude, maybe some teams will have a red flag and then not take you. But, like, at a certain point, the NFL prides itself on trying to be, you know, upstanding when it comes to administration things, you know, the PSI level, Deflategate. I saw Pro Football Talk had a tweet, like, if this was the PSI levels of the football, they'd make sure that it would be confidential. But if it's some guy's Wonderlic score, you're just not guarded at all of the secret, and you'll let it out without any kind of protection. Who gets punished? Is anybody getting punished for those scores coming out every single year? I think it's absurd.
I think if the NFL really wanted to clean it up, and I think maybe they just don't care, or maybe they even want to leak it. But if Roger Goodell really cared about the promise, he needs to figure out who leaked it, and those people should be fired.
Topic number two.
What do Johnny Manziel and Montel Cozart have in common? I hope Montel Cozart isn't, like, you know, in some way finding out that you're comparing him to Johnny Manziel, because he'll just never talk to you whatsoever.
They are both quarterbacks, which people probably would have guessed,
but
they are also both throwing at multiple pro days this year. Johnny Manziel has already thrown at San Diego's and Texas A&M's, and Montel Cozart went back to Kansas, and he was the quarterback at pro day there and also will be for the one coming up on Tuesday at Boise State. So it led me to believe, why was Montel Cozart going to throw to Cedric Wilson? Maybe Cedric liked him, wanted him. But I was thinking, well, maybe I would want Brett Rypien throwing to me. Found out that if you're a current player If you participate in Pro Day, it counts as one of your spring practices. Hmm. So if Brett Rippon, hypothetically, or any current quarterback, would participate and be the thrower in Pro Day, they would only be allowed to play in 14 of the practices for Boise State or for whatever school they're at.
I didn't know that. So, yeah, trivia fact of the day from Bob Beeler.
Topic number three.
All right, Chris, is LeBron right about the MVP race?
I don't think so, but he might be more right than a lot of people would think. He was brought the question, LeBron, who do you think is the MVP? LeBron says, well, if I had a vote, I'd vote for me. So LeBron says he's
honest.
The MVP. He's honest, and the numbers certainly say, what's he at, like 26-9-9 pretty much for a good stretch of the year. Like we commended Russell Westbrook last year for averaging a triple-double, and that was the reason why he won the MVP. Although, by the way, Russell Westbrook might average a triple-double this year. Nobody's talking about him for the MVP. Well, if averaging a triple-double was your foundation for voting for him for MVP last year, then if he averages a triple-double this year and he's not in, like, the top five, what does that say about the true value of a triple-double? It probably really wasn't that significant in the first place.
Sounds like maybe it's just not as big a story this year.
Yeah,
right?
It's not. It's not a part of the narrative of the year. But back on LeBron's point. Now, I think Harden is the front-runner, and it should be no surprise that Harden's a front runner. His team's really good, and he's right now leading the league in scoring, shooting a pretty good percentage while also averaging double digits in assists. But LeBron James this year, 9 assists, 8.5 rebounds, 27.6 points per game while shooting 55% from the floor. I mean, that's the difference. LeBron is shooting 55% while still putting up all that. So his efficiency is through the roof. And he's still creating for teammates. And you could say that, well, what if LeBron wasn't on Cleveland? What would their team be this year? It might be, what, one of the 5-10 worst teams in basketball? I think what people are using against him is his defense hasn't been strong. But if you're going to say defense is the difference between LeBron being the MVP and James Harden being the MVP, well, LeBron's a better defender than James Harden. Like, you're just applying a higher standard for LeBron than you are applying for Harden. So I would still vote for Harden. Now, for me, the difference is the team success, and I think that plays a part of it, that the Rockets are by far and away best record in the game, and Cleveland right now is struggling for the 3 seed in the East. But I do not think the case for LeBron is crazy.
He's the best player in the game. Maybe just be the LeBron James MVP and pick somebody else.
Number four.
What former Major League All-Star died today?
It was Rusty Staub, and it's a player that played for an awful lot of years, and I decided to look and see a little more about his career and life. I knew some bits and pieces of it, but you talk about a success story. Rusty Staub is the only player in Major League Baseball history with 500 hits for 4 different teams, did it with the Astros, Expos, Mets, and Tigers. He joins this club, Ty Cobb, A-Rod, and Gary Sheffield as being the only players in Major League history to hit home runs before 20 and after 40, as far as their age. Traded from Houston to Montreal when the Expos came into existence in 69, learned the language of French because he thought he needed to be able to communicate in Montreal with the fans, embraced the culture, became a chef, opened a very big restaurant in New York City, and then since his retirement in 86, retired before the 86 season, has raised millions for charity, starting funds for the New York Police and Fire all the way back in 1984 and helping feed over 9 million people through Catholic charities. He raised money for them for food pantries. 9 million people fed because of Rusty Staub. There's a guy, 73 years old, Chris, that did it on the field and also off the field as well. Very successful.
Quick Hits with Bob and Chris on 93.1 The Ticket.
And Chris, he's the first player that I can remember that wore batting gloves on both hands. Now you see people with batting gloves all the time.
Right? Yeah, you can see batting gloves, pretty much standard operating procedure. I found an interest just to kind of change the subject, and I know it's an abrupt change. But one of my buddies who hosts a sports talk show in Houston, Paul Gallant,
He tweeted out something. Is baseball play-by-play on Twitter going to last the entire year? I find this to be funny. Like, at the beginning of the year, people are more likely to tweet out things like, he brought up this example, 3-1 to Correa with Bergman on second, one out, Hamels already at 12 pitches in the first. That's only acceptable for opening day, right? Like, you can't be we're not having people tweet out, like, beat reporters tweet out play-by-play updates after opening day, right? Like, that's only an opening day thing.
I would think, but
where do you stand on this?
I wouldn't be tweeting things out like that. It would be that descriptive.
Yeah.
Maybe it's just for this. Everybody's waiting to hear what John Sterling says for Giancarlo Stanton home run. Maybe we'll get one of those today. Coming up next, fish tank. Yep. World of Baseball opening day fish.
Yeah, we got a baseball-themed fish tank. I'll see if I can get Bob on my side because I know Chris is going to sink me three times. That's next on Sports Radio The Ticket.
It's the Fish Tank with Michael Fisher.
Producer of this show comes up with three topics. He really believes them at the bottom of his heart.
On Sports Radio, The Ticket.
That's right. It's time for another Fish Tank. We had the March Madness themed Fish Tank last week ahead of the Elite Eight. Now we've got the Major League Baseball Fish Tank right ahead of opening day. Bob's favorite year, though I might just go home and cry as my Marlins first team to 0-1. They have officially lost, so they are in dead last place. But we'll start with my first idea. We've talked about it. Bob was commissioner, made the suggestion, but I'm going to take Bob's suggestion a little further. Shorten the season in Major League Baseball to 140 games. There's no sense of urgency. The season just drags on, and I don't want to see baseball in November, Bob. I'm sorry. That's football time, not baseball time. Shorten the season down just a little bit. Who cares about records? I just want to see competitive baseball from start to finish and not watch baseball after Halloween. Sink or swim, Bob.
That's a big-time sink. I'm going to give you a big, big boulder to tie to yourself to sink that one. Baseball is a sport that records matter. Season records matter. I probably would be in the minority. People would be against me for wanting to go back to the old 154. But to 140, you're going to trim off 24 games. And how are you going to sell to the TV networks, to the players, to the owners that you're going to have 12 less dates that you can open the park and sell tickets for or sell for TV? Big time sink. I will find the biggest boulder I can to sink the 154 down to 140.
All right, Chris, can you get anything bigger than the biggest boulder Bob can find?
Oh, my goodness. I could lift probably a heavier boulder than Bob.
True.
That's the thing. Like, you know, if we both found the same, you know, went to a boulder factory. I don't know if there's a factory that makes boulders, but I would probably be able to lift a heavier one than him, right?
So am I sinking faster with you then?
I'm actually swimming. Like, I don't mind 140. Why not? Urgency. Now, I would go about it way different than you. Like, I think splitting the season is the better idea.
That's Bush League. That's minor league, and they do it in the minor leagues for a reason.
That is minor league, and you know what? You have two pennant races, and it's fun when you can have two pennant races. The midseason race, and then the one that's in September at the end of the year. That's actually fun. You know, sometimes you know how you use the minor leagues for, you know, experimenting, and then the big leagues take it. That's right, Bob. You're going to start to have runners at second base to begin extra innings because that's what they do in the minor leagues these days. I mean, I'm not sinking or swimming all the way. Like, I'm not swimming all the way to, like, the end of the ocean. But I'll half swim this because your thinking is along the right way of going. I just would split it into two halves instead of having 140 games.
Well, Bob was talking about me angering the players. I'm sure I'll anger him with this next one. That's because I believe it is time for Major League Baseball to add a hard salary cap. Winning should be about maximizing your talent evaluation, not because you're located in New York and your local TV money is seven times higher than the TV money in Tampa Bay. We need to create a cap. Oh, roughly about $150 million, the average salary this year per team payroll, about $137, so a little bit higher, but it's about finding talent, keeping that talent around, not because the Yankees in Boston have over $200 million and my poor Marlins have less than $100 million. So, Chris, sink or swim, let's add a hard cap to Major League Baseball.
I'm going to sink this. You don't need a hard cap in Major League Baseball. If anything, like, the floor might be more important than the cap when it comes to the salary structure because you'll have, you know, some teams like the Marlins. Hello, Marlins. Hello,
hey, we're,
guys wearing
I believe,
a Florida
according
Marlins
to
hat.
Sport Track, we're actually like 26. Go look at the A's or
yeah,
the Rays.
That's true. Like, there are some teams who do have a lower payroll, but I don't think it's the worst thing in the world to have the Yankees and the Red Sox and the Dodgers being the best teams. Like, I'm with this in the NBA, too. It's stars coming together, collaborating on one team.
that's actually a good thing when it comes to the playoffs and playoff runs and storylines and stars. Like, that's kind of what you want for a national consumption of your sport. I think the Yankees this year are a fascinating story, and I think that's great that the Yankees are a fascinating story. And if they make the playoffs, win 100 games, and are playing some high-stress playoff games, I think it'll be more likely that we talk about baseball in shows like this. We talk about baseball anyway, but maybe even Caves and Prater will talk about baseball if the Yankees are out here as a team of interest. And that is because they have more money to spend. So I'm going to sink you on it. They don't need a hard cap.
I'm
going to
sink your second thought there, Chris, about Caves and Prater talking about baseball.
You don't think that's going to happen?
I don't think that'll happen.
Oh, okay.
All right, Bob, can I get you on this one? Can we make a hard salary cap in baseball?
If you listen to my commissioner for a day, I was in favor of a salary cap for the teams. I was also in favor of a big floor, but I think it's a bigger picture. I think you're probably heading in the right direction, but it all has to come with how revenue is distributed. And I don't think anything can be changed if the, you know, the Yankees have way more money to work with than the Marlins. I'm not saying I agree with Chris that I think the Yankees should have more money to work with than the Marlins, but I think the gap shouldn't be so. And again, I'm pushing my revenue sharing plan of 50% of the local TV money being shared. So, yeah, I'm going to give you a hard cap at the top, but I want it to go a little further and a little more thoughtful than just making it a hard cap at the top.
And finally, we'll get to one thing a lot of people talking about. Let's put the DH in. Both things I'll say, I am a fan of the DH in one league and the pitcher in the other. I like the difference of games, but if I had to do one, get rid of the DH of the AL. Watching the pitcher bat is a fun strategy. Just today, John Lester batted twice with the bases loaded, and those are probably the two best at-bats I watched in the entire Marlins game, because it's hilarious.
The only guy you got out.
Yeah, well. The DH, all the manager says, just go up and mash the ball, sir. I like watching the pitcher's bat, especially in the postseason. It creates drama, so get rid of the DH in the AL. I want the pitcher batting in every league. Sink or swim, Bob.
Oh, I'm swimming with that. I'm giving you the floaties. I'm giving you the lounge that you put in there. Whatever you want.
The flippers.
Want.
You need the flippers.
I'll give you the flippers. I'll give you everything. I have hated the DH from day one. I love the symmetry of baseball with nine guys, nine innings, three outs, three strikes. I would love to see the DH drop. Anything you could do to further that cause, Fish, you know I will support it.
Chris?
Sink. I like National League Baseball more than American League Baseball. Now, the way you phrased it is, like, if I had to pick one.
Yeah.
If that's the option, if I had to pick one, I'm absolutely going, let's just have the pitcher bat in both leagues. But I absolutely would keep the DH mainly because I'm player-friendly, and I think it's a way for players to have more, you know, jobs, have jobs for longer. Stars like David Ortiz, hard for them to keep playing as long as they did without the DH position. I do think, you know, if you're going to do the Bob Buehler plan of building up these stars in baseball and helping to market individuals a bit more than what they have in the past, you want to keep those individuals playing baseball as long as possible. And if they have the option of still being a DH in their elder years of playing baseball, if you market the stars, you want them to play as long as possible. So I think it goes hand in hand. If you want bigger individual stars in the game, you should want the DH around because that could keep them around for a longer amount of time.
And that is Fish Tank. You sink what, two?
Yeah, I swam the first one. Uh-huh. I gave you a swim, which is like the first swim in at least 3 months.
I'm pretty sure it's the first swim of
2018. And I swam with two.
And I got one with the floaties and everything. I count that as like seven swims. Bob swims on baseball. That counts like three times more than yours, Chris. That's like you swimming on a basketball idea.
Well, you haven't had a basketball question, like an NBA question. We've had a lot of college basketball, I suppose.
Maybe when we get to the playoffs, we'll have an NBA theme. We got to build it around the theme. There's no NBA games that matter going on right now, Chris.
I mean, just playoff seeding. You know, that the tank race might be the most significant race that's going on right now, though. Fish, we'll get DeAndre Ayton.
Fish, I'm going to throw out a challenge for you next week. I think our fish tank, by three guys that really aren't that into golf, I think it needs to be Masters-centric next week. Right. We ought to come up with something wild for that.
I can come up with some wild things for golf. I think I've had a couple good ideas. I've got this.
All right, so my question for you, though, is it Brooks Koepka? That's your boy?
That's my boy.
What's up with him? What's up with him? Are you in? Are you even in the Masters pool?
I don't know. I haven't been informed. I think I might have got kicked out because I was too good. I think I had two top two.
You beat JP and that.
JP got into the. They had the secret commissioner's meeting and said, "No, we can't have this fish guy back. He's taking JP's hard-earned money."
But you went and made the silly decision of you had the first pick in the draft. One of those opens.
And then I passed on. Yeah,
you passed on your man Brooks Koepka, who was out here winning it for you.
Yeah, and he went to JP and he won. So if I get, no matter where I pick, I'm taking Brooks Koepka, unless JP is, you know, circumvented me and kicked me out of the league because I'm taking his pizza money.
Where do you think Tiger Woods will be drafted?
Probably pretty high. I have a bet with JP on Tiger Woods. $10 who Tiger Woods will beat Phil Mickelson.
And you say yes?
Phil Mickelson will beat him?
Yeah, he picked Phil Mickelson. I picked Tiger. $10.
I mean, I'm not here to question JP on golf, but like.
He's losing on that Wednesday after the Masters. There'll be no pizza in the JP family because I'll have the $10 for the pizza.
You should bring in pizza just to showboat.
Just buy pizza with mine
and leave the crust in the studio after eating it. All right. Well, we'll try to get that going next week. Final Four Saturday coming up on Sports Radio The Ticket. Loyola will take on Michigan. That'll start at 4:00 on Saturday afternoon in San Antonio. Kansas Villanova to follow. And then, of course, the national championship game will be Monday. So Saturday action starts at 4:00. Monday, the game itself starts at 7:20. If you can't watch it, listen right here on The Ticket. When we come back, what if baseball were like college football with just 12 games? If this was opening week, what will we be saying about today's action? That's next on Sports Radio The Ticket. College football. There are 12 games in the regular season. We're going to forget the people that go to Hawaii and play a 13th game. Baseball, there's 162. If you compare the seasons, winning one college football game to open the season, Labor Day weekend, would be worth a 13.5 game winning streak.
Jeez. Yeah, it doesn't really translate very well. Baseball's a marathon, not a sprint. College football might be the ultimate sprint of a season. But I think, you know, opening day, it's fun to react, but everything is curtailed by the fact that, well, it's 1-162. So, like, what you're seeing is fun, and I think, you know, we'll get to some of the things that are happening. But I think it'd be more fun if we had college football reactions to what's happening in the first game of the year in Major League Baseball, because that's taking it to a whole other extreme that nobody else is going to do. So, hey, why don't we do it instead?
Well, we'll start with the first game. It just went final. Well, that was two games final, but the first game to go final, the morning opening day game, the Chicago Cubs taking on the Miami Marlins. Rough game. John Lester pulled after 3 1/3 innings. He gave up 7 hits. This game was actually tied at 4 after 3, and the Cubs turned it on, pull away for an 8-4 victory.
I think the Marlins could go winless this year. I really think the Marlins can go winless this year. If you look at the prior teams that have had this little level of talent, they don't win. And if you look at the Marlins and their schedule up ahead, they have tough games, not only the opening, but their next series and the series after. They're playing teams that we think could be playoff caliber. So if you look at the Marlins and they get off to a bad start, I think there's a chance that they go winless this season.
And Joe Maddon was just so smart. Joe Maddon, Nick Saban on the same plane. Lester not cutting the mustard. And Lester, as we look at him, gets pulled in the middle of the fourth inning like he's changing pitchers for quarterbacks. I think that's a big deal for the Cubs to be able to say, you know what, Lester doesn't have it on opening day. We're gonna make sure that we get the win by being able to switch pitchers at the right time.
Second game between two teams, sort of projected to go middle of the pack, and another blowout, a 9-4 win for the Mets over the St. Louis Cardinals. The big highlight, Noah Syndergaard, only 30 innings pitched last year, goes 6 innings, strikes out 10 Redbirds. Mets win 9-4.
With this one, I'm going to say that Syndergaard could be Cy Young caliber, like if he stays healthy, and that's the thing. We know he has the ability. It's like, let's say, a Cam Newton type. If he stays on the field, you know he's a difference maker. So if he gets enough starts this year, Syndergaard is a Cy Young caliber pitcher. He can also win the MVP, because why not?
And also, comparing the Cardinals' efforts, it was like a quarterback throwing the key interception to lose the game. The Cardinals are ahead. The Mets have the bases loaded. Martinez has Yoannis Cespedes down 0-2 in the count. leaves a fat one that Cespedes rips into the outfield for a base hit, just like an interception that gets run back, two runs for the Mets off a huge mistake by Carlos Martinez.
Another game in action, actually sort of sneaking on the radar. Over top of the fifth, Minnesota and Baltimore, they just got a hit. They've now had five combined hits through five innings. Manny Machado, one for one with a walk, would be your highlight of the game.
So, all right, who has five hits, you said?
Combined.
Oh.
The Twins have three and the Orioles have two. We're averaging a hit per inning.
It's a 0-0 Mac opener, league opener.
Ugh. The Twins are going to score less runs this season than the Minnesota Vikings scored points. Like that's the takeaway from this. The fact is, if you played already four innings in a game and you haven't scored, that means you have no offense. And it's like, you know, for example, we were watching Boise State at the beginning of the year and their opening game of the season against Troy. Brett Rippon didn't have it in the first couple of drives, and you can't wait for him to torpedo the season. You're going to have to make a change. And that's why Montel Cozart finished out the game. A similar thing to Twins, they're going to certainly have to make some adjustments.
You're listening to Idaho Sports Talk. Bob and Chris, along with Fish today, talking about what if today's opening day were like the opening day of college football, where there would only be 12 games to determine who makes the playoffs. Listening to Idaho Sports Talk on Sports Radio, The Ticket.
Well, you're reigning, defending world champs in action today. Houston Astros played a little rivalry game against the Texas Rangers. It's 1-0. George Springer leads off the game with a home run. Cole Hamels laboring. Two innings pitched. He's pitching in the third. Hasn't got a out. Bases are loaded. He's thrown 43 pitches.
Well, it's like Springer goes back the distance on the opening kickoff to put the Astros in good position. I mean, this is a team that won it all last year. They're looking like they're going to crack it open already. And this is a team that looks like they're going to go to back-to-back national champions.
Yeah, you got to wonder, though, if it's Jake DeLome syndrome with Cole Hamels at this point. I mean, it's not interceptions, but it's walks. And you've given up three walks so far in two innings. And Cole Hamels is one of my favorite guys, but you know, you overwork him, you use him a lot, and you know, had some difficulties towards the end of last year. So you go into the next year and you look shaky to begin it. You have to be concerned about Jake DeLome / Matt Schaub syndrome of one day you have it, the next day you don't. And I think the Rangers need to come up with another plan for the ace of their rotation.
Well, Yankees in action, of course, going to be probably the most watched team. They just added Giancarlo Stanton, and it didn't take long for him to have an impact. First at-bat of the game, two-run blast. Yankees lead 2-0, bottom of the first over the Blue Jays.
And we're going to have to start wondering if this Yankees team is going to be the best offense of all time. Like they might seriously challenge every single run record that's been in existence for their franchise. And we're talking about a franchise that in the 20s had maybe the best offense in baseball history. But when you have some guy like Giancarlo Stanton who comes in and hits a home run on his first at bat, it reminds me a lot of when Randy Moss joined the New England Patriots in that opening game against the Jets. He went out and caught a 70-yard touchdown. And guess what? That Patriots team nearly went undefeated and won the Super Bowl. They went undefeated in the regular season. And, they set offensive records, too. So this Yankees team, based on what we've seen so far and with the college football reaction to it, I think it could be the best offense of all time.
And what a transfer. I mean, when you look at how college sports is different now than it was 25 years ago, it's the advent of the transfer. And look at Giancarlo Stanton transferring from a school that, you know, isn't a very good team, joining like a school like Alabama and leading them to victory in the championship at the end of the season. Giancarlo Stanton, what an addition for the Yankees.
Well, the Yankees crosstown rival, the Boston Red Sox, also in action. They're taking on the Tampa Bay Rays. They've got a 3-0 lead on perhaps the most exciting play in baseball, an inside-the-park home run from Eduardo Nunez. Ooh. Plates two. They lead 3-0. Chris Sale, two strikeouts and three batters.
Yeah, but the Rays might be an abomination. I mean, you got to be able to spend money, and it's really hurting the game. It's hurting the quality of play that the Rays are spending not enough money on talent around to help out. Chris Archer is pitching in this game, and Archer might be the best player that they have on their roster. And even with the support of Archer on the mound, the Rays' lack of talent is just an abomination for the sport. And it's something that I think the conference needs to address.
It may be a case of voting them out. I mean, it reminds me of a Boise State, San Jose State kind of thing where one team just can't get out of its own way. They've got bad facilities. They have no money. They have no tradition. Mm-hmm. And the Red Sox have everything.
Well, the Angels making us wait a little bit for their superstar, Shohei Ohtani. He's batting eighth today. He's the DH. Angels go down 1-2-3 in the first inning. Currently bottom of the first. They're tied with the A's 0-0. But everyone waiting for Shohei Ohtani, five batters away from his major league debut.
Yeah, this is a guy who bad reports in the fall camp. Bad reports in the preseason for Ohtani to the point where I'm reading into what the coaches are saying and I'm wondering if he's a contributor at all, and this will be the first time that we get a chance to see him in live game action. But in college football, you got to value the beginning of the season because you don't have much of a sample size. This is, I know, a freshman that's coming in as somebody who's hyped, but if they're not ready, they're not ready. And this is seemingly, at least from the early preseason reports of fall camp, like a guy that they might need to redshirt instead of play.
You took the words right out of my mouth. At one point he was 2-for-27 batting.
Yeah.
You know, I really thought, you know, the redshirt would have been the way to go. Baseball, you'd send him down to the minors. You know, bring him back up when he's a little more ready. Don't waste the season right now.
And then finally, Chris, we'll get this in just for you.
All right.
Phillies took a 1-0 lead over the Atlanta Braves. Your man, Rhys Hoskins, not a home run, but a double. Phillies lead 1-0.
He's the MVP. He's the MVP of baseball, and that's not only my football reaction to it. I picked him to win the home run title. So yeah, I'm just going to step it up a whole notch and say he's going to win the MVP in the National League. Not even a football reaction. That's just my true belief.
And that would be Chris on one of the shows before the game. There would be somebody like a Desmond Howard that could say nothing bad against Michigan. So I think that would be what we would be comparing it to football with Chris trying to analyze what the Phillies are going to do. He would give the same kind of analysis and critique of them as, say, a Desmond Howard would do to Michigan. And that's our take on what if baseball were like the opening of college football where you only had 12 games. Again, in all seriousness, a win in the college football season would be worth a 13.5 game winning streak in Major League Baseball. And if you went to the NFL, a win in the NFL, any week of the NFL would be worth a 10 game winning streak in baseball. I was trying to think what I would compare it to, and I'm going to compare it to medicine, Chris. That if you have something that you really want to get out of your system, you're going to take something that's really strong and gets it out of your system. Or like I take this very small pill with cholesterol that's like 5 milligrams. I take it every single day. I don't even notice it. That's what baseball is. It's something that, you know, is a little bit of something every single day.
I will say, I like the overreaction talk. I think that was fun. If baseball was talked about that on a national level, I think it'd be a lot more interesting.
Can we do it every day? I think we'd wear ourselves out.
I don't think I could muster it up every single day, though. No.
up next in the update, who's the next biggest star to leave the Marlins? Do we need to get a seatbelt on Fish's chair over there that he doesn't fall out? Who's leaving the Marlins? That's next on Sports Radio The Ticket.
Ticket Sports Update, sponsored by Stormore Sheds. Create a space of your own with a new shop, shed, or garage from Idaho's best-selling shop for over 25 years. See why for yourself at Stormore Sheds in Meridian. Well, it's Bob's favorite day today to watch baseball. Not Chris's favorite day to watch baseball. Bob likes opening day. Chris likes the 4th of July, so we asked you guys, when would you rather watch a game, the 4th of July or on opening day? And right now, 54%, Bob, say the 4th of July.
Wow. They'd probably go with Chris with better weather. The one thing I think I'm going to give people an opening day, you get a day off work. 4th of July, you're already off.
And maybe that's why more people have gone to games on 4th of July. Those also can affect the frame of reference. Yeah, I love baseball 4th of July hand in hand. Opening day is special, too. It's not like I'm hating on opening day by any stretch, but weather nice, more in the mood for a hot dog, more in the mood to be just, you know, chilling, waiting in line for food. Can eat some ice cream, too. Just a lot of the things I associate with baseball. 4th of July is just a more natural pairing.
I wonder what the actual, I bet you'd be close, what the actual attendance, average attendance at the 15 Major League games on the 4th of July versus the 15 opening day games. I'll bet you'd be pretty close. It'd be both pretty high percentage of sellouts. A lot might depend on who actually is at home. Certain teams draw better than others, but, you know, be pretty good mixed bag between the two days.
Well, speaking of opening day, my Marlins, for some reason, got the nod as the opening team on opening day. They got to host the Chicago Cubs. And the game started in a way that I think will perfectly describe the Marlins season on the first pitch of the 2018 Major League Baseball season.
I expect him to take a pretty healthy cut here if he gets a juicy-looking first-pitch fastball from Urania.
Urania to Happ. And a drive to right.
Go, baby.
What were you saying, JD?
Yes, sir.
Good. Oh, baby.
Oh, my. That's unbelievable.
The season has begun.
Oh, this place, and it's full of Cub fans. And they are on their feet. Ian Happ, unbelievable stuff.
And that is obviously Cubs radio.
Yeah.
That go out, get out, or whatever they were yelling. I thought that
was a neutral broadcast. I thought that was a national.
Just like the fans were neutral at that game.
Yeah, which I was wondering, like, how in the world can the Cubs begin at bat at home? Like, that doesn't use. Oh, they're not at home. That crowd was in Miami, even though they were yelling and screaming for a Cubs home run.
Yes, and speaking of the Marlins, we all know the big names that left. We'll talk about one of them coming up here in just a few minutes. But the first name that has now declared himself a free agent, the other couple were traded, would be Marlins Man. He will not have season tickets for the first time since 1993. And he said his services are now open to other teams. And he told ESPN he estimates he attends 263 sporting events per year in highly visible seats. And that four teams, he named the Tigers. I don't know if the Tigers were actually one of the four teams, but he named them, have reached out to them for joining their ranks and becoming a season ticket holder.
I wonder how many other season ticket holders have had season tickets every year the Marlins have been in existence. 93 was their first year.
Probably none, and for good reason.
Yeah, the value of Marlins Man is the fact that he wears a Marlins jersey.
He said he's going to take the logo off. He's just going to wear an orange jersey if no other team recruits him.
So would the Tigers, the Giants be competitors because of the fact that orange might work for those teams?
Syracuse?
Syracuse and Clemson. There we go. There's our four teams.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think if you was starting to wear jerseys of other teams, he's just another guy in the front row. He's not a star because of his great rugged looks. You know, it's not anything like that. It's the fact that he wears a Marlins jersey. He doesn't have some engaging personality that you can't resist. He's not out here telling jokes to the players who are on the court. No, he wears a Marlins jersey. If you take away the Marlins jersey, he's just the guy in the front row.
Well, speaking of the Marlins, he did say Marlins Man said he will go to one game this year in Marlins Stadium. That will be the Yankees and the Marlins for good reason. Giancarlo Stanton traded to the Yankees, and someone asked John Sterling right before the season started, what's the home run call? He's, you know, famous for all of his interesting home run calls. He said, it's got to be a secret. You guys got to wait till Stanton hits a home run. Well, Stanton didn't take long. First at bat as a Yankee. He hits a two-run home run, and this is what John Sterling sounded like.
The National League MVP last year swung on and drilled to deep right center field. It is high. It is far. It is gone. It is first Yankee at bat. Giancarlo. Non si può stopparlo. It is a Stantonian home run, a two-run blaster right center in his first Yankee at bat, and the Yankees take a 2-0 lead.
The only thing I understood was a Stantonian home run. But I'm guessing the other was Italian.
It was Italian, and someone translated on Google, and it says, I cannot speak of it.
Well, that's a bad thing for a radio play-by-play announcer to ever say that I can't speak on it. You're a radio play-by-play guy.
He did say in the interview that he was worried people wouldn't get it. I think he can go. I think he went 0-3 if you're talking baseball with people getting it.
I don't understand. I didn't know which was the call. Like, he had like three different things that he said within it. I think the Stantonian home run is the thing he needs to stick with. You heard in the call. Can you play the call one more time? Notice the pause.
The National League MVP last year swung on and drilled to deep right center.
Wait for it.
It is high.
Wait for it.
It is far. It is gone. It is first Yankee at bat.
Wait for it. Pause. Like, it's like he's looking down to like, okay, what was I supposed to say?
Maybe he has an index card that he's thumbing through.
Yeah, it was like, wait a minute. Okay, he hit a home run. What am I supposed to say? What was it? Let me think of it. It definitely was not natural at all.
I think you say Giancarlo. That'd be way more fun than whatever he just said.
I always love his calls when you're out in the car in the East Coast, you're listening to Sterling, and it'll be like, it is high, it is far, it is gone. That's his home run call for everything. A low line drive into the bullpen.
Like, he just wants to get into his
shtick
and, you know, sometimes at the expense of actual description of what's going on. I mean, hey, he's got a sting, though, and
he's doing the Yankees, and we're not.
I'm about to say, Stanton's about to hit a bunch of home runs for him. And
he'll get a lot of practice. Yeah. He might decide to tweak it as the season goes along.
What's their order today? I didn't catch it.
It was the Yankees lineup.
It was Gardner, Judge, Stanton,
Sanchez. Now, that's effective against a left-handed starter. I wonder if they'll change if the Blue Jays would have had a right-handed starter in the in the game.
Now, Bob, does the White Sox guy, the put-it-on-the-board guy?
Ken Hawk Harrelson.
Oh, yes, that's my favorite home run call.
Oh,
nah, man.
That's terrible.
That's just not what I'm not what I'm here for. White Sox guy, Jason Benetti.
Doesn't the Hawks still do away games?
I think he does some games. Like, you know, Benetti does a lot of them.
You guys are, that's my favorite home run call.
No.
Well, a sneak peek of the 2018 Basketball Hall of Fame came out today. According to Adrian Wojnarowski, Grant Hill, Jason Kidd, and Steve Nash all informed they'll be entering the Naismith Basketball Hall of Fame. Full class will be announced during the Final Four this weekend.
Basketball Hall of Fame, not NBA Hall of Fame. There is no difference, which I wish there was, because it really is too all-encompassing. They don't make enough distinctions, and I guess Grant Hill's collegiate career is included in it.
Absolutely.
Because NBA, did he do enough to be a Hall of Famer? I mean, you could make the case maybe he did do enough to be a Hall of Famer in the NBA, even though I think he's more known for what could have been than what actually was, because of all the injuries that piled up with Grant Hill. But, you know, the Kidd and Nash is the two point guards. It's almost fitting that they went in together, because I think they were, you know, the two point guards when it comes to, you know, fancy passes and setting up teammates of their era. So they're in together, which is cool. Now we have different point guards like Harden and Westbrook and Curry, Lillard. We got so many point guards now who score and could do a lot of things. But just remember how good that Kidd and Nash were in that era where there wasn't guys like that.
I think it should be separate as well. I think that there are some people that, you know, you look at football right here, Boise. Kellen Moore would be a Hall of Fame college quarterback. He would not have a chance to go to Canton whatsoever. So you can expect, I would think, somewhere down the line, he could be enshrined in Atlanta at the College Football Hall of Fame, and deservedly so. Total different eras, different games, different rules, different everything. And I think basketball over the years, I think college basketball should have had something. I think pro should have had something separate.
And one more thing to end the sports update. There's been talk about sort of maybe a G League for college athletes or high school athletes who don't want to go to college, and it looks like that step has been taken. It came out today from Sham Sharnia of Yahoo Sports that Darius Bazley, who is a commit to Syracuse, a top 10 pick in the 2019 NBA draft projected at least, has said he will no longer go to Syracuse. He plans on turning pro and entering the NBA G League.
Which is definitely a different path that's always been an option. Just nobody has really taken this option until Bazley has decided to do it. Unfortunate now as a, you know, Syracuse fan and alum that he's not going to help transform the Orange in the ACC next year to make them a top contending team in that league. But for the guy, happy that he made the right decision for himself. I mean, I have to imagine it's the right decision because he made it. Now, what happens with him in the G League? He gets to enter what is the G League draft, which will decide which team he plays for. That will have no connection to what his NBA team would be when he's NBA draft eligible in 2019.
Do you think that he will be the first of many, or do you think it will be have to be kind of a wait and see, where if maybe he goes to the, I don't know, Delaware or somethings, or the Santa Cruz, what's the Santa Cruz Warriors or whoever, Reno Bighorns, if it's successful and then he gets to be a high pick in the next draft, do you think we will see more people do it?
Yeah, I mean, if you're not in it for the college experience, and I don't know how much he gets paid for it. I mean, he gets paid something, but it probably isn't a lot.
It's going to be more legally than you're getting in college, right?
Yes, more legally than you're getting in college. Again, legally than you're getting in college. So I don't know. I have no idea if it's a success and he becomes the number one pick. I can't imagine that'll be like a road that nobody will travel. If he becomes a top 10 pick, you would have to think. But I just think the whole structure of collegiate athletics is in such flux right now that I can't even imagine what college athletics will be 3, 4, 5 years from now.
But, you know, on guys going out early, I don't think we're talking about that many people. You know, even if we are talking about one and dones, we're not talking about that many people. There's way more players that are playing college basketball. We're talking about dropping the bucket.
Yeah.
Just the names you know at the very, very top of the list.
Yeah, but we're talking about the best players. And in basketball, the best players matter. Like, you know, it's just the fact of the matter is, if you have the best player in the country, you're probably going to be a good team. And that best player in the country might be a freshman. He might only be there 1 year. So that's the thing about basketball.
Tomorrow morning, be ready at 9 a.m. Get $50 worth of gift certificates for $25 to the Tortilla Factory Mexican Grill. It's home of Boise's only tortilla machine, guaranteeing you the freshest tortillas and Mexican food in the Treasure Valley. Tomorrow morning at 9, go to KTIK.com and click on Sweet Deals. What did we learn today about opening day of Major League Baseball that will help us be more knowledgeable as the year goes along? We'll take a look next when we come back on Idaho Sports Talk on Sports Radio The Ticket. Final Four Saturday on Sports Radio The Ticket. Royal of Chicago continues at 4 as the Ramblers take on Michigan from the Alamo Dome in San Antonio, followed by Kansas and Villanova when that's over somewhere around 6:50. Final Four on Sports Radio The Ticket, as well as the national championship game Monday night that will tip at 7:20. If you can't watch it, listen to it on The Ticket.
It's time to find out what we learned on Idaho Sports Talk today with Bob and Chris, brought to you by Pro-Am Sports, your full-service pro shop and bowling specialist with high-quality bowling balls, bags, and accessories located right inside West East Garden Lanes in Garden City. It's Bob Saver Day. It's opening day. His Giants are in action tonight at 7, correct, Bob?
5.
5.
7 Eastern. Do not bother me. You better have a great reason to call me from 5 until about 8 o'clock, and if the Giants are losing, I'll be even surlier than I am right now.
So you might not want to call you after the game either.
No.
If the Giants lose.
No.
So, you know what? Forget planning the show tomorrow.
You got to have the whole show planned tomorrow, because he's going to walk in and just read whatever you
write for. But what if they win?
Then you can call Bob and go out to celebrate with ice cream.
Yeah.
Of course. You made a good choice, too. Ice cream.
Well, chocolate ice cream if it's Bob. We don't want to limit
that,
Bob's chocolate.
That rules me out. I'm done.
Well, you can get vanilla. They serve malt. There's no just chocolate ice cream restaurant. You can go to get vanilla, Chris.
Ice cream restaurant. That sounds like a great idea.
It would be a great idea. Well, speaking of your Giants, Bob, you didn't pick them to make the playoffs in our season preview yesterday. You said they'd be better. We got a texter who agrees with you. Texter says, I believe the Giants will be twice as good as they were last year. They'll lose the division by 20 games, not 40.
That's really pretty funny. When I saw it, I laughed. One thing going on tonight, the lowest ERA on opening day. Clayton Kershaw has a chance to get it. His opening day ERA, and this is what the Giants have to go against tonight, 0.99, and this is at least in 5 starts. Rick Mailer, who was a pitcher for the Braves in like the late 70s, early 80s, who was very mediocre, has the record 0.92. If he throws 4 shutout innings and would leave the game, he would pass Rick Mailer for the best ERA on opening day. I'm hoping that the Giants deny Kershaw with that record tonight.
I thought he was talking about like the ERA is going into the game, like the lowest ERA.
No,
like,
no, the lowest ERA on
ERA yet. No, because they haven't given up a run.
No, in opening day games.
God,
and I was going to give you one other one on the pitching side. Most wins for a pitcher on opening day is 9. Walter Johnson, Hall of Famer, original Hall of Fame class. Of course, they pitched all the time back in the 20s when he pitched. How about this? 9 opening day wins. He's 9-5 on opening day, so he did lose. But in all 9 wins were complete game shutouts.
Wow. And then he pitched the second game of the year, too. How did he do in the second games? He didn't. It's true. He didn't have an 8 days rest. He pitched the next day and probably also went 8 innings, because that's insane.
And then one more text on the commercial tower text line. It is opening day. A couple days are final. We got a text in. The Mets, undefeated.
And the Mets have really done well on opening day. They opened the lifetime of the Mets, losing their first opening days, but have now won 37 of the last 49 openers. The Mets on opening day, usually a very, very good bet.
You know how
Tigers, by the way, they got rained out or snowed out today in Detroit. If they win tomorrow against the Pirates, they will have won opening day for 10 years in a row, which would be a new record.
Now, someone, Jim Kearney, he covers the Mets, tweeted out a quote from Syndergaard saying, "We're going to go out there and play classic Mets baseball." I think that's what Mets fans are afraid of. Let me go out and play classic Mets baseball is exactly what they're afraid of in New York.
All right, JP, what do you guys have today? Is it another classic Caves and Prater?
Well, Bob, didn't anybody tell you about this mandatory employee meeting at 5 o'clock?
No.
Well, you're going to hear about it. No. Coming up, actually, you're going to enlighten us a little bit on Major League Baseball. You know, we're not the most well-read baseball people on Idaho Sports Talk with Caves and Prater. But also at 4 o'clock, Chad Kripe's going to come along. He was up in Moscow for the Student Senate meeting last night, all regarding Rob Spear. We'll get the latest from him. Ask the AD with Kurt Apsey at 5. And then also we're going to check in with Stephen Fife. He's a former Bora kid, Utah Ute, Dodger, been up and down in the major leagues, kind of had some injuries, played in Japan. And right now is one step away from the major league, so we're going to get an update from him too.
And speaking of local guys, Josh Osich made the Giants. He has been pitching great in spring training out of the bullpen. Lefty, he and Tony Watson, the two lefties the Giants will use out of the bullpen. I think they're counting on big things from the BK grad.
So we've got all that and more coming up.
All right, JP, he will be leading Caves and Prater starting in a matter of minutes. Opening day is here. Does it get really good for me starting at 5 o'clock, or does it get really bad?
You're facing Kershaw. You can't expect to win.
I know. That's going to be tough. Caves and Prater are next. Keep it tuned right here. Chris and I will be back tomorrow at 1 on Idaho Sports Talk on Sports Radio The Ticket.
Sports Radio 93.1 FM and 1350 AM, The Ticket.